Now we're going to hear two kids from outside of Boston, from elsewhere on the Northeast Corridor, young musicians who have an exciting collaboration to share with us. Please welcome our two final guests for the day, Dominic Macon, that 17-year-old composer Joanne just mentioned from Bethesda, Maryland, and the 13-year-old pianist who will play his work from New York City, Pong Pong Gong. Pong Pong, you look familiar. You've been on our show before when you were 12.
Yes.
I'd say your voice has changed in the last year.
Mm-hmm.
And would you say you're a little taller?
I would.
Well, and Dominic, you two are actually friends. Where do you know each other from?
Every Saturday we go to the Juilliard Pre-College Division together.
That's right. And Dominic, besides being a wonderful composer, you're a fine pianist yourself. So why don't we have you performing your own pieces?
Because I have stage fright.
Don't we all? I mean, but how does it manifest itself with you?
Well, my right foot, which is supposed to be on the pedal,
yeah,
it starts like literally vibrating so hard that I'm like hitting the piano. And
really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's intense. I'd actually sort of pay to see that, really. But
well, it's about to happen right now. So.
Okay, don't get nervous. Fear not. That's why we have Pong Pong here. Pong Pong, what's been the experience like learning this piece?
Well, playing this piece is actually my favorite part of my everyday schedule.
Really?
Yeah.
You play some pretty cool stuff. I mean, so yeah. Dominic, that's high praise. Pong Pong, what gets you into this piece? What do you get out of it?
I think it just has the power, and it has everything. It has, based on all the melody, how the harmony goes, and it just it's like pulling me into this piece totally.
Wow, so emotionally it's a fulfilling sort of thing.
Yes.
As well, that's wonderful. So Dominic, why don't you introduce this piece?
All right, this is a piece I wrote last year. It's titled Là où la mer rencontre le ciel. In French that means there where the ocean meets the sky.
Okay, let's hear it. I'm gonna come turn pages for you too.
Thank you.
13-year-old pianist Hong Kong Gong, performing a work by 17-year-old composer Dominic Maikan, La où la mer raconte le ciel. He comes to us from Bethesda, Maryland. Thanks, Pong Pong. Beautifully played, very compelling, and a really compelling piece. I know what he means by, you know, it's a piece you can really sink your teeth into, and it's a whole emotional world in there. It's gorgeous. Pong Pong is going to be back in a few minutes to play some Rachmaninoff, but first we're going to spend some quality time with Dominic. We've talked about the fact that you're a pianist yourself. How did Pong Pong play this piece differently than you might have?
Well, it's a bunch of little things that put together make a larger one. For example, little articulations such as instead of playing staccato, he played, you know, staccato and legato at the same time, which is good because I like seeing different interpretations.
You actually got to discuss this issue of interpretation of what's left open for the performer with one of our country's most prominent composers, Libby Larson. Tell everybody how that came about, meeting with her.
Well, Libby Larson is an amazing composer, and From the Top arranged a masterclass. It was a private masterclass, one-on-one, me and her.
And part of our Young Composer Project, I guess.
Right.
That's great. And so for those of you who don't know the name, Libby Larson was one of the young composers of the 80s who helped sort of reinvigorate American concert music, I'd say. In addition to composing, Libby currently holds the Papamarku Chair in Education at the Library of Congress, which basically means that she's working to rethink the way music is taught in our schools. We recorded Dominic's session with Libby, and we're going to listen in on some of their time together. But before we hear any of that session, I'd like to point out that Libby absolutely adored your work, Dominic. She just couldn't get enough of talking about it, gushing about it continually. So, but what's more interesting for our listeners, the gushy stuff or the more constructively critical stuff?
Unfortunately for me, the more critically constructive.
It's very brave of you to undergo this scrutiny. And one of the first things she pointed out relates to the subject we just raised, trying to give the performer as much information about what the music should sound like through writing it out, you know, giving signals, notation, versus leaving interpretation up to every performer.
Here's what I'm worried about. I'll tell you. I'm worried that what you hear and what you play are not on the page. And what you're describing, it's not on the page. And in fact, when the piece becomes part of someone else's repertoire, for them to come close to the meaning of the piece, there has to be some indication to them.
Right, but of course, when you see a section like the end of page 10, measure 124, it sounds like this.
But that's not what's on the page.
It's not exactly what's on the page. It has a slur, it has the dynamic, but you can't play that staccato and, I mean, it doesn't have an exact interpretation.
It also doesn't have a rubato or a rallentando. It has no pedaling.
No, it doesn't. But a lot of Beethoven and Brahms doesn't have exactly what he had in his mind. But you have to learn it from all his pieces and understand his style so that you can put it in.
Great. And so how do you learn it?
I guess you'd have to play a lot of my music.
but there's no one who's been interpreting your music. It has to be started somehow. So I would recommend, since you seem reticent to approach the page, I'd recommend you record yourself playing the pieces and pass on the interpretations that way, absolutely. Otherwise, people will bring whatever repertoire they have and whatever teaching tradition they have to the page. If that's all right with you, if it's okay with you, if somebody comes in and plays this piece with only the knowledge of Shostakovich learned on a Red October piano, if that's okay with you,
I see
fine.
Your point.
Yeah?
So, Dominic, why the reticence to put information on the page, to give us your interpretation?
Because I like to hear other people's interpretation. Mm-hmm. I know that I have my own, obviously, but, for example, Pong Pong had a different interpretation, and I'm sure that almost everyone liked it. Mm-hmm. And so I like leaving it open to the interpreter, because if you can find someone as good as Pong Pong, then they'll get the same message across.
Right. But, I mean, even that one little bit that you and I talked about, playing perhaps one voice staccato, short, another voice at the same time, legato, that's a piece of information that's pretty sophisticated and speaks to your own sophistication of being a wonderful piano player, and is the kind of thing that, you know, should be on the page. It might give the performer an idea, not only about playing your music, but playing other people's music too.
Exactly. And when there's a really critical passage, then I'd put it in. And I think Libby is definitely right when she says that I need to put in a little bit more. So I have been putting in more.
You're putting a little bit more?
Not too much more.
Okay. All right. Then Libby went on to make a really cool discovery about your music.
While we're on La Où la Mer, you say it.
Là où la mer rencontre le ciel.
Ah, so beautiful. I have found a melodic quirk you have in all of your pieces. It's a preference for a certain approach to a certain fragment of melody that I...
What is that?
Do you think you know?
Is it the 8-bar?
No.
No?
It's actually a motive.
A motive?
Yes, indeed, and it is... I find it everywhere in your music. Found it in the string quartet, found it in all the piano pieces, found it in the songs, the James Joyce songs. So I just thought I'd point it out to you, because something in your subconscious likes that.
No, I did not notice that.
Yeah, it likes that.
I noticed the diminished. And...
Yes. Yes, there it is.
That, yes.
But it's the contour and rhythm of that little melodic fragment that is everywhere. So... do you analyze your music?
No.
Aha! Would you analyze your music?
Yes.
Yeah. It might be that you want to begin to apply at some point very objective analytical tools to see what your subconscious, what the theory of your subconscious is about. It's amazing what you can learn about what your instincts are telling you. You find then that way you begin to grow in your own style. Because you begin to understand what it is your subconscious is, your instincts are telling the technique of your hands to do.
Wow, that was kind of an amazing discovery. I mean, that's a musical motive that she found in a lot of your pieces?
Yeah, and the ones that she hasn't seen, mm-hmm. I went back and looked, and I found them there too.
Oh, no. Well, you know, Shostakovich and Berg and Webern and Beethoven, a lot of composers actually had the letters of the notes. And they would spell out their lover's name in a piece. I mean, is it subconscious or is it real? Are you putting somebody's name in your piece?
It's nobody's name.
Really? Okay.
No.
I'm just wondering, you know, because it's a perfectly viable way of expressing, you know.
No, but, it's more subconscious.
Yeah, but it's interesting what she was saying about analyzing your music. I mean, after the fact. In other words, not starting out with an analysis, but going back to that.
Because right.
I think it would be interesting just because... We probably have, let's say, a shape of an overall dramatic shape of a piece that probably is more comforting to us, and so you might find that there's a similarity there that you might, you know, change the next time. What has been your impression from doing analysis after she mentioned it?
Well, actually, yeah, I have been analyzing my things after she told me to.
Yeah.
And I learn a lot of what I'm doing, uh-huh. even though I don't know I'm doing it as I'm doing it, mm-hmm. so that helps because I can help play with it and change it.
Perhaps have au gratin instead of fries all the time or something, you know, that kind of thing.
Exactly.
It's amazing. Now, Dominic, I have to say, you're great to talk about your writing process so freely and so in-depth like this. I mean, having a major composer examine your work on national radio is quite extreme. Do you feel beaten up or like we've done an autopsy or something on you? Or?
Well, no, actually, even though it kind of sounds like it from... the little clips we have, there wasn't really that much tension.
Yeah.
And she has a lot of energy. And she's
and as I say, a lot of enthusiasm about your music. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So it was a really fun learning experience.
I'm glad. I'm very glad. So to lighten things up a little bit, before you go, let's take a moment to examine something from your lighter side.
Another teenage classical musician's guilty pleasure.
Okay, Dominic, fess up. What's your guilty pleasure?
I obsessively listen to Celine Dion.
Or just like the Titanic song, or do you listen to a lot of things of hers?
Everything. I had to drive up here. It was an 8-hour drive and 8 hours of Celine Dion.
Why, Dominic, why?
Because she's so small and her voice is so big. I don't know where it comes from.
It is nice. And actually, you know, I got to say, there's an emotional core to your music that would, you know, she seems to sing from the heart, does she not?
And yeah, and she has a lot of melody, and in yes. my music, I put a lot of weight on the melody.
Absolutely. I think that sounds good. Well, Dominic, I've so loved meeting you and hearing your music. I just want you to know that for you, my heart will go on. Role composer from Bethesda, Maryland.
Did you know that From the Top is really into education? We've teamed up with Young Audiences, America's leading producer of live educational programs in the arts, to help kids make their own radio shows in schools across the country. According to this teacher we worked with in Worcester, Massachusetts, it's not exactly a problem getting kids involved.
The kids are really excited. They've been excited with the From the Top radio broadcasts that they've heard. They've heard the formal ones that I have on disc. And they've started talking about, what can we do now? Some of them definitely just want to be behind the scenes. Others are like, can I play? Can I do a duet? Can I sing? You know, I think it could be a 4-hour radio broadcast.
Putting together a radio show can be a powerful learning experience, even if the final result requires quite a bit of editing. To find out more about our partnership with Young Audiences, go to youngaudiences.org and click on What's New. Each year, From the Top and the Jack Kent Cook Foundation present 25 performers of exceptional musical ability, outstanding academic potential, and financial need with the $10,000 Jack Kent Cook Young Artist Award. Learn more at fromthetop.org. Chris.